This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Colombia's President Juan Manuel Santos signed a historic peace deal with a rebel leader Rodrigo Londoño, aka Timoshenko, on Monday. The accord comes more than 50 years after Colombia plunged into political violence. Monday's signing ceremony took place in Cartagena and was attended by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, US Secretary of State John Kerry, Cuban President Raul Castro, and a host of Latin American heads of state. Cuba had hosted months of peace talks leading up to the signing of the deal. Timoshenko is the leader of the Marxist guerrilla group called the FARC, which was responsible for a significant portion of violence over the years. However, U.S.-backed Colombian paramilitary groups were just as guilty of crimes. Groups like Human Rights Watch have criticized the deal, saying it would encourage impunity for rights violations. There is to be an election in Colombia on October 2nd, offering the voting public the chance to ratify or reject the deal. My guest is Jennifer McCoy, a distinguished university professor of political science. She was a founding director of the Global Studies Institute at Georgia State University. She's a specialist on democracy promotion, mediation, conflict prevention, election observation, and Latin American politics. She has authored or edited 6 books and dozens of articles. Welcome to the program, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk a little bit about the backstory for our American audiences who might not have been following Colombia's very complicated and tortured history over the last half century. I mentioned the FARC, but also government paramilitaries, many of which received support from the United States under Plan Colombia. How do you summarize in a nutshell what this very violent conflict that resulted in, you know, something like 250,000 deaths, what the main issue was at stake?
Well, Colombia has a number of armed groups, as you mentioned. So the problem is that there are multiple issues at stake if you look at the wide range of actors involved. But with the FARC guerrillas, the rebels who they have been negotiating with the past 4 years and just signed the peace agreement, their main issue going back to the 1960s was social justice, better distribution of resources to the poor and the landless in Colombia, particularly in the rural sectors, and also greater political participation for everyone. Colombia has been a very unequal society in terms of income inequality, land inequality for many years. And in the rural sectors especially, government services weren't provided. So that was the initial motivation. Over the years, they became linked with drug cartels as a money-making venture to finance their rebellion. And many people thought that they were beginning to lose their ideological motivation and were becoming actually more motivated by money. That's not clear. But those have been the issues at stake.
And so what really led up to this peace deal then? I mentioned Cuba has been hosting these peace talks. What role has the U.S. played? The U.S. has been deeply enmeshed in Colombia for many years and has not exactly been sort of free from guilt in promoting some of the violence.
No. In 2000, the United States started helping Colombia with a major aid program called Plan Colombia that was providing primarily military aid to help fight first the drug cartels and then as well the guerrillas. And as I said, there are armed groups that are criminal drug cartels. The paramilitary were the right-wing groups that were hired by the owners of the big land owners to protect them against the guerrillas. And then there was the FARC, and there's another guerrilla group, leftist insurgency, still out there that has not yet started peace talks. So it's a very complex situation. The U.S. aid, several billion over the last decade, did help the previous president mount a very major military campaign that weakened the FARC guerrillas tremendously. That helped to bring them to the negotiating table, but the government couldn't completely defeat them militarily. So the FARC was motivated to negotiate, and so was the government under the new president, Juan Manuel Santos. That brought them to the table 4 years ago, and it's taken them 4 years to come up with this agreement, which was signed yesterday.
Right. I mentioned months, but it really is has been 4 years when this deal has been sort of brokered. What does FARC get in exchange for signing this deal? As mentioned, Human Rights Watch and some others have criticized the deal as basically writing off past crimes.
Yes. Well, the deal includes substantive agreements like land reform, like greater electoral participation, and changing drug policy. So the FARC agreed to give up any drug activity, but also to the government agreed to change its policy and to focus more on providing alternative crops, for example, for farmers to grow and to stop spraying their crops with dangerous pesticides. But in terms of the question about impunity and human rights crimes. Throughout 50 years of war in Colombia, there have been a lot of human rights abuses committed by the guerrillas, by the paramilitaries, and by the military themselves. And this is what has been at issue and took the longest to negotiate. Now, these human rights crimes now have not only national law, but international law that require that Colombia has signed an international treaty called the Rome Statutes and is under the International Criminal Court since 2002. And so they are required or obligated to punish human rights crimes. And if not, then the International Criminal Court could get involved. So one of the major points of the negotiation.
What role has the voting public played in this deal, and will they play? I mentioned October 2nd, there is to be an election where basically people would vote up or down to approve the deal or not. Is that the only time in which the public has been consulted, or has it been consulted in these past 4 years?
Well, there are about 8 million victims of this long conflict. Many people displaced from their homes, 5 to 6 million, others who have lost loved ones or been harmed in other ways or been killed. And so victims' organizations actually went to Havana, where they were doing the negotiations in Cuba, and presented their views, gave their input to the talks. They weren't part of the negotiation, but they were able to give their input to the talks and to talk directly to the FARC guerrillas as well. So they have had input, but the major role will be the vote on Sunday. Now, the concern that the guerrillas will be left let off the hook from any of their crimes is not exactly accurate. They will have to serve time if it is found that they committed major human rights abuses like war crimes. But the time they serve won't be a traditional jail. It will be in an enclosed area, restricted movement, and they will have to pay reparations. They will have to give labor, like removing mines, landmines that have been placed around Colombia, or rebuilding villages that were destroyed, and giving restitution like funds, if they have them, to the victims.
What about arms, laying down weapons and disarmament, and will any of these same standards be applied to the paramilitaries?
Yes, well, the guerrillas will be moving to special zones. So when they demobilize, they will concentrate in special zones where they will be restricted until they can go through a truth-telling commission. So they must tell the truth, agree to give up their arms, and this will all be monitored by the United Nations and some Latin American organizations. So there'll be international monitoring of this disarmament and demobilization process. They will tell the truth, acknowledge their guilt, promise not to repeat it, and then those, as I said, who committed grave crimes will serve time, and those who didn't will be amnestied. Now, the paramilitaries actually had a deal made in 2005 with the government, and so they already had one deal to allow them to serve only 5 to 8 years, and that was the basis for this current deal of a maximum of 8 years of restricted movement for those who committed human rights abuses. Anyone who has not yet gone through this process, including civilians and politicians who may have provided material support, financial support for any of these human rights crimes, can also go through this process. And receive what they call legal benefits or preferential special legal treatment. Otherwise, they may be liable to actual criminal suits in the normal civilian courts. The military also will have their own special tribunals for legal benefits as well.
Now, Jennifer McCoy, in an article you wrote about the peace deal called Will Colombia's Peace Deal Get the People's Vote? Let's talk about that important question that you refer to. In your article, you say the public wants peace but are not united on how to get it. So what are the prospects for a yes vote on October 2nd to ratify the deal? What if there is a majority vote that says no, go back to the drawing table?
If the majority votes no, then this agreement is basically dead. It could be renegotiated, but this current president won't be allowed to be a part of that renegotiation. And so it'll be basically starting over, trying to renegotiate some of the terms and make it tougher. What I think Colombians will be thinking about is it possible to get a tougher deal? Because remember, these FARC guerrillas were not conquered militarily. They were not defeated militarily. They're voluntarily coming to a negotiating table, which means it requires a compromise, and that's what they got. Support is growing in the past few weeks as they've seen the FARC actually take steps toward the demobilization. And the government, with this beautiful signing ceremony yesterday, everyone in white and a major, you know, beautiful, peaceful symbolism. I think that the chance, you know, that support is growing and will continue to grow, and as the public learns more about the accord. But there's major opposition led by the very popular former president, Álvaro Uribe.
And that was my next question. Why does former President Álvaro Uribe, who, played a very significant role during Colombia's war, why is he opposed to this deal?
Well, he argues that they are not being punished sufficiently, that there is impunity. His own father was killed by the guerrillas, so he has a personal stake. Some argue that many politicians tied to him may be subject to investigation for supporting some of these armed actors. In fact, many politicians in Colombia have already been tried and sanctioned. For example, members of Congress were receiving campaign contributions from some of the paramilitaries in particular. It's called the Para Scandal. So many, many people in Colombia have participated in this conflict in a variety of ways. And I think that a lot of people may be afraid of what kind of criminal suits may be coming down the pike if there's not some kind of settlement.
Jennifer, how unprecedented is this deal on the world stage? If we step back and look at Colombia, you know, Colombia is not alone in the world in having protracted a conflict that has lasted decades with many different armed factions, with guerrillas and government, complicit in horrific crimes. Does this deal offer a model for other conflicts?
I think it will. It is the first civil conflict completely negotiated under this new international law, the Rome Statutes, that requires some kind of accountability for human rights crimes. Past civil conflicts or transitions from abusive military or other authoritarian kinds of states have been settled with general amnesties where everybody gets off the hook. That's the way, you know, to end these conflicts in the past. So this is new, that there is some accountability. And it's referred to as restorative justice instead of retributive justice or punitive justice. So it's not just punishing the perpetrators, putting them away in jail. It is asking them to contribute to society and to pay reparations. So that is new. And many of the human rights organizations in Colombia are very supportive of this new approach, even while international organizations like Human Rights Watch have been more critical.
And then finally, what about Colombia's political future if the public does ratify this deal? Can former FARC members run for office? Will we see a more vibrant democracy? You know, this might sound idealistic, but is there a possibility that all of those people with desires to reshape the nation politically will use the democratic process to do that?
That is certainly the hope. And that is the plan. So yes, they will be able, the FARC guerrillas, former guerrillas, will be able to run for political office, participate in politics. And the idea, and this has happened in other countries, is that armed movements put down arms and try to achieve their goals through the democratic process. So they transform into a peaceful political party. Now that's not an easy thing to do. There's a lot of learning involved. And there are also a lot of questions and uncertainties for the FARC. The past attempts to do this with other guerrilla movements in Colombia, when they laid down and tried to participate in politics and run candidates, there was a massacre where thousands of them were killed. So the FARC have also requested security guarantees from the Colombian government for themselves against other criminal bands or paramilitaries who might be out to get them. But the public is skeptical about FARC political participation. That is one of the second thing that they have been questioning. Both, is it punishment enough? And second, should they participate politically? Many people are against that. But again, I think when they can look at the long term of the prospect of incorporating more visions, more ideologies, and more people into the political process peacefully, that will be of benefit to Colombia in the long term.
And we'll certainly follow news of the election October 2nd, and we'll try to have you back on our program. Jennifer, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sanaa.
And we'll also post a link to my guest, Jennifer McCoy's article about Colombia from our website. Jennifer McCoy is a distinguished university professor of political science and was founding director of the Global Studies Institute at Georgia State University, specializing in democracy, elections, and Latin American politics. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find all our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.